Hello, I'm Robert Bound and you're listening to The Monocle Culture Show. This week's topic is Golden Hour, the brand new album by the American country star Kacey Musgraves. Golden Hour could be a reference to that glorious moment when the sun sheds its final light for the day. It could also be a reference to the town of Golden that Kacey grew up in. It might even allude to the solar eclipse that happened on her birthday during the making of the album. Maybe it's all three. While we make up our minds about the mysteries behind the title, here are some facts. It's 45 minutes long with 13 tracks and covers everything from LGBTQ youth to LSD trips about her mother. Not your usual country music fodder. But is it any good? That's what we're about to find out on The Monocle Culture Show. At 29, Kacey Musgraves has three albums, plus a festive one, three country music awards and two Grammys under her belt. No mean feat. The singer is originally from Texas and started making music as a teenager and had a brief reality TV stint when she came seventh on the televised singing competition Nashville Star. Musgraves now dwells in the country music capital of Nashville with her husband, the fellow musician Rustin Kelly, who she married last year. She's been hailed as the fresh face of country music, who's bringing the genre to a more liberal crowd, and as she releases her brand new LP Golden Hour, everyone is poised for her to go from country queen to fully fledged pop star. I'm just a dime store cowgirl, that's all I'm ever gonna be. You can take me out of the country, but you can't. The critics have noted how Musgraves has been sitting on the fringes of the mainstream up until now, but could Golden Hour be the album that propels her into Taylor Swift-like success? Well, to come up with the answers, I'm joined in the studio today by the music reviewer for The Telegraph, Sarah Carson, and the broadcaster, Baylen Leonard. Welcome both to the programme.
Hello.
Do you know each other?
We do now.
We do now, that's right. That's the answer we wanted. Are you guys friends with each other?
No, we just met while we were waiting for you to get your coffee done just right.
But you are friends now.
Yes.
Okay, we've bonded. We're going to bond over this wonderful new record, Golden Hour, from Kacey Musgraves. Baylen, I'll come to you first. Mm. Is she the saviour of country music? Is she saving country music from itself?
Okay, first of all, country music doesn't need saving. It comes every now and again. There's an artist or there's a critic or there's a blog or somebody influential who says, savior of country music. You know, can this person save country music? You know what? Country music is doing just fine. Thank you very much. I will say that obviously...
Baylen's got his hands on his hips a lot. So he's getting fighty while he's saying this. I mean, I'd asked the right guy.
I think that there are a lot of people who can change the perception of country music. I think there are people who can take country music to a new audience. I think that they can bring new stuff into country music, and country music, like any art form, is this living, breathing, or most art forms, I should say, living, breathing, evolving thing, right? So is Kacey Musgraves saving country music? No. But is Kacey Musgraves opening up the genre? Is she bringing in new fans? Is she making the type of art that she wants to make without regard to whether critics or people kind of in the know decide to put it in the country category? No, she's not doing that. She's making what she wants to make. And, you know, Sturgill Simpson said a really great thing with his last album when people were saying this isn't country enough, or they were saying this is opening up country to a whole new thing. And he said, you know what, no matter what type of album I make, I'm from Kentucky, it's going to be a country album. Yeah. And that doesn't mean that geographically you have to be from a certain place to make country music, or that just by dint of the fact that Kacey Musgraves is from Texas, that means that she's a country artist. But she's a country artist, you know, that's where she's made her mark. That's where she's created her art. A lot of the influences that she was using, certainly not all and certainly not on this album, came from the country world. She is a country artist. So therefore, after the success that she's had with her previous albums, firmly in the country genre, I think that she feels a bit freer to kind of step outside of that. And also, having met her a few times and most recently talked to her backstage at Country to Country last month, She says, you know what, I wasn't thinking about what genre this album would be in. I was
musicians
just making...
Musicians don't, do they? It's kind of the wrong... It's the right question to ask you because you've given such a wonderful answer. But musicians don't necessarily think in terms of genre like us critics might do, perhaps.
That's true, although I think that there are some musicians who definitely think in terms of genre. You know, there are some, be it country artists or be it pop artists or be it rap artists, that firmly have the commercial side in their eye and they know that they need to stay in their lane, as it were. And then I think there are other artists that don't feel that pressure. And I don't think that Kacey Musgraves feels that pressure at the moment. And I don't actually think that she's felt the pressure to do what country music has expected of her from the beginning of her career. You know, because if you look back to...
She's always kind of upset the received apple carts of country music. She's done that lyrically, certainly. I don't know about personally, but certainly lyrically. Her subject matter that has always been a little bit left of centre for what we think of as the centre of country, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I assume there that you're talking about a song like Follow Your Arrow, which, you know, said, hey, kiss some boys if you want, kiss some girls if you want, smoke some weed if you want, it's all cool. And that certainly pushed some boundaries. Then, I mean, looking back on that now, it seems, you know, utterly ridiculous that that caused a scene, particularly when you think about that there were male musicians. They weren't singing about, you know, gay kisses, but they were certainly singing about weed and getting drunk. And I'll remind you that not that long ago, they did a survey of all music genres to see which one had the most drug references, and country by far came out on top.
Is that real?
Ahead
of
every other genre.
Wow.
The mention of drugs was far more, you know, in the history of country music, was far more than any genre. And certainly the genres that you might expect there to be a lot of drug references in. And oddly enough, cocaine was the number one drug that was mentioned in country music.
Wow.
So it's nothing new that she mentioned, hey, smoke weed if you want to. But I think it was a combination of the fact that she was a woman. It was also combined with the fact that she was talking about, you know, a little bit of same-sex smooching at the same time was what actually...
Triple S threat.
Yeah, that's what pushed people over the edge. But on the other hand, if you look at the song that really put her on the map, Merry Go Round, that was very much country themes, but it was holding up a mirror and showing the not-so-pleasant side of country life, which isn't always what mainstream country does. You know, it has a tendency to romance.
Well, also, same trailer, different park, the name of that first, the first major label LP was such a great title and kind of showed, was a great sign of intent. Sarah, as Ben says, it's an interesting thing. Maybe we were asking the wrong question here. We're kind of saying, is she saving country music, or is she opening out to a new audience? It doesn't need necessarily either of those things to happen to it. But listening to, in comparison to her last couple of records, how pop has she gone with this one?
I was surprised to read so many critics lauding this as a huge pop crossover album, because while I do think there are really clear disco influences that she's talked a lot about herself, I think she's said that she imagined to herself what would happen if I fused Daft Punk with country and things like that. So she's definitely had in her mind dance music and pop music. And you can hear it, especially on songs like High Horse, which I think is, the standout song in the record, is really, really disco-infused. But I don't think that she's done it to do
and
that.
I don't mean selling out here, by the way, and this isn't what I mean. I just mean how it seems like there's less echo, less pedal steel on a lot of these things. There's a lot less what you might call country stuff.
Yeah, I think, well, I would say that she has quite deftly managed to go pop, go mainstream without getting rid of those things altogether. The fiddles are still there, the pedal steel guitars are still there, the banjos are definitely still there, but she's managed to scale it back just enough, maybe to make it digestible for mainstream radio. Baby, don't you know? I don't feel like selling billions of records and being accessible to the mainstream has ever really been her goal, largely because it's slightly risky. As we said before, the things that she's written songs about might not always have been accepted that well by the heartland country audience. But I certainly think that more people will find a way into this if they are put off by things like banjos and fiddles. Although I don't think they are put off by those in the same way that they once were.
Yeah.
I think people are a lot more open to a little bit of that on their pop songs nowadays. I mean, there was that huge Avicii song with Dan Tominski a couple of years ago, which was jarring, but I really did like it. And it was just very strange to hear him in nightclubs. I remember just finding it completely bizarre, but quite joyful at the same time.
So I guess there's always been an appetite for that sort of crossover stuff. Lots of people have done it in the past. Well, a lot of people, I mean, when you listen back to... I mean, I suppose the Stones and Elton John and Rod Stewart and all those kind of British exports to America were making really close to country records in the early 1970s, because that was just what American pop music was. It was blues or it was country. There wasn't much in between. You know, this is, I wonder if we'd be having this same conversation if we were going, Dolly Parton seems quite popular. Balin, do you know what I mean? And we kind of regard her as a country star, and she kind of is the embodiment of the trappings of a sort of camp idea of country in a certain sense, you know, that kind of larger than life thing. But would we be having this conversation about 20, 30 years ago? Hang on, I was born in 1977. I'm lying about my age, essentially, here.
Over 40 years ago. we would.
Yeah?
Because certainly in the country world, anybody who's ever had any sort of crossover success has always been tarred with a certain brush. You know, we can go back to Johnny Cash, who, I mean... Would anybody now say Johnny Cash isn't country enough? No, of course not. But when he was bringing in rockabilly stuff, or even Hank Williams, you know, bringing in a different sound. Or when you look at when they developed the Nashville sound, which was a kind of an answer, as it were, to when country music was going a bit more out to the West and getting the kind of red dirt sound into it. Nashville was like, no, wait, we need to develop our own sound. So we're going to add loads of lush orchestrations, and we're going to make it this big kind of palatable sound for the mainstream. And Patsy Cline is the perfect example of a Nashville sound. Now, would any of us say that Patsy Cline is not country enough? You know, anytime artists have pushed the boundaries in whatever way, they get met with a bit of blowback. I mean, now not only do we have Kacey Musgraves, but if we have people like Sam Hunt or Florida Georgia Line, who are these huge country stars, they get a lot of stick for having R&B and rap influences in their music. And they're still, you know, they're as country as cornbread, as we say where I'm from. And yet, because they're using more what are kind of some people think of as urban sounds, suddenly they're not country enough. I mean, when I was growing up in Tennessee, we were listening to all of that stuff, you know. We listened to country music all the time, of course, because it was everywhere, but so was rock. You know, so was soul, so was blues. So for an artist to not be influenced by all of those things would be even more strange, I think.
And don't you think that this record feels really, really natural? It does not feel like she's made a real effort to break out of country, because she already wasn't exactly confined within country. It doesn't feel the same as when Taylor Swift quite vocally sort of warned everybody that she was leaving country behind. And, you know, I'm not the same little girl that you all knew from Nashville. Kacey is more country than Taylor ever was anyway, because Taylor was a very kind of, she's not a small town girl from Texas, as talented as she is. Kacey, I feel like this is a reflection of her life at the time. The first record was a sort of cynical but very earnest look at small town life and the life, the country life, I guess. The second one kind of touched a lot more on her as a rising star and again, I think, said, I'm not leaving country behind, I'm still the same girl I was, in her lyrics. But this one, it's all about falling in love, but it speaks to the fact that she has become such a huge star. She's on tour with major pop artists. She's known internationally. And I think that, those musical influences just seem really... It flows so well from her other stuff, I think.
Yeah, I guess she's just making pop albums. She just happens to be where she's from. She's using the raw materials.
Yeah, right? I think it's interesting that you said, you know, it's not like she's trying hard on this, because I also think that, in addition to that, it's almost understated, this album.
I think so.
Which is an odd thing to say when you think about her influences, like you mentioned Daft Punk, and that she was listening to the Bee Gees a lot, and there's a tiny bit of kind of vocoder stuff in there, but certainly not a lot of it. But actually, the album as a whole, to be as kind of eclectic slash harmonious at the same time as it is, it actually feels like a really understated album.
She's been on tour with Harry Styles, I think, in the US. That's a meeting of interesting fan bases, I'd have thought.
And Katy Perry.
And Katy Perry.
You know, so like you mentioned earlier, Sarah, she's touring the world with these massive pop stars. But at the same time, she's on the Breakers tour with Little Big Town and Midland, which are, you know, very firmly country artists. So it proves that you can kind of have a foot in both camps, I think.
Totally. And I think isn't another of Casey's peers, I guess, Maren Morris, is on tour with Niall Horan from One Direction.
That's
so
right.
Maybe there's a kind of...
I like Maren Morris a lot as well. And what do we learn from that? Let's play the cynics card for a second here. Is this a marketing thing? Is this like, if you don't like these guys, you might like these guys? They're obviously on the same, with the same management company, the same labels, all the rest of it. There's a little bit of loss leading and all the rest of it done on those things. We kind of know how those support slots are often booked on tours. How does that work, do you think, Bethan?
I can be cynical if you want me
to. No, I don't want you to be cynical. I'm asking a cynical question. You can give me the...
I'm sure there's obviously a lot of kind of industry stuff involved with that. But I have a tendency to think with Katy Perry, like she just kind of liked Kacey Musgraves. If you look at their, certainly the way their personal style in terms of the way they dress, you know, there's not huge discrepancies there. They're girls of a similar age. They I would imagine they have similar interests. Katy Perry grew up, you know, a preacher's kid. So I can't actually remember if Katy Perry's from the South or if she's from a small town. But even if she isn't, kind of growing up in a super religious background and growing up in a small town in Texas has some similarities there as well. Harry Styles, we've kind of seen how he's evolved since One Direction. You know, he's either already has or will have a big show in Nashville, and the way that he's been dressing in terms of some of the suits he's been wearing are certainly influenced by some of the old kind of honky-tonk looks as well. So maybe he just really liked Kacey Musgraves as well. You know, maybe it's as simple as that.
Okay.
Maybe it's not.
I'm relieved, though. I like it. I kind of want it to be like that. I like the fact that these people have sort of Catholic tastes, you know, and they can kind of like hold anyone under their arm and bring them on stage. I think that's good stuff.
Yeah, I think that you would have to be the certain type of country artist to tour with Katy Perry and with Harry Styles, but Kacey Musgraves is clearly that country artist.
Yeah. We're going to open it out because I know that each of you have some sort of interesting further reading sections for our listeners, lucky listeners. So, Sarah, I want to come to you first. There's an interesting idea of Shania Twain and crossover artists. Let us just, while we're getting our heads together, let's have a clip of a... I know you didn't request this one, but someone will definitely like it out there. This is Man, I Feel Like a Woman. Baylen Leonard there, resisting the urge to jump on the table, rather sadly. He's just a professional broadcaster, I suppose.
I was wiggling in my chair.
Wiggling in his chair.
That's the thing about that song, regardless of your personal feelings about it, you got it.
You can't not move to it.
Yeah, you're going to scream out that
it
you feel like
it gets my foot tapping a bit, despite my reservations.
It is, it's good.
It is all right. It is good. I don't necessarily think it's Shania at her best.
Okay.
But it's a good song.
Do you have a favourite Shania?
I think it is that. It's Man, I Feel Like One. I wasn't joking.
Okay.
It's,
really?
I
mean,
yeah,
but
I think it is.
What about That Don't Impress Me Much and the video with the leopard print catsuit?
That is good
desert.
As well.
Yeah,
that is good.
Come On Over, though, is an understated, brilliant song. Come On Over.
Yes, it is. Yeah. I love that song.
Yeah, people don't, you know, that's not as popular as some of the others, but I think it's probably one of her best.
Okay, come on, this is good. See, this is exactly what our listeners need. We've got immediately a Baylen Leonard Shania Twain mixtape happening here.
Yeah.
So Sarah, if we can fuse these two worlds together, and we're talking about crossover artists, because I know this is why you flagged up Shania Twain. Where do you think Kacey Musgraves sits in this? How does she remind you of Shania, and in a good or a bad way, whichever you choose?
Well, I wouldn't say that she reminds me of Shania, but I think Shania 21 years ago kind of released that record, and it's the thing that made her an international star and obviously an enduring one, because that record still stands as the best-selling. Now, Kacey, I don't think will ever be best-selling across the world, because she's times have changed. She's not doing these like huge ballad love songs, which were very much the thing in the late 90s. But with this record, she kind of joins the legion of women, including Shania, the biggest one, the Dixie Chicks, and then I guess the most recent is Taylor Swift. Yeah. In becoming a little more pop friendly, which is a good thing. I think it's also a good thing that it feels like a very, very natural progression. Shania is kind of the archetypal one because she became so big, but Taylor Swift's is the most radical turn on her heel musically, and I don't necessarily feel like it felt natural with her in the way that it does with Casey. I mean, it was one of the strangest things ever to hear Taylor Swift release a dubstep record.
Wow.
I knew you were trouble, I think, was just bizarre when I first heard it. Casey feels very natural as someone who's moving into more general pop sound, but I think what's really nice and special about her is that she hasn't had to sacrifice all the trademark parts about her music, why people love her, to do it.
She is, and maybe as Balin might say, having her cornbread and eating it. It's all right, right? We can handle this.
Yeah, you can do that. You can have your cornbread and eat it.
And eat it.
You know, Sarah, as you were talking there, I was thinking about somebody who's kind of doing the opposite of that in, like, Miley Cyrus, who obviously came from a country background, Billy Ray Cyrus, her dad, Dolly Parton's her godmother. Then Hannah Montana happened, and then she broke out of that mold and became Bangers and all of that stuff. And now actually returning to her country roots, so kind of going at it the other way around, which I think is really interesting as well.
Yeah, I think the nice thing about music now versus when Shania changed into pop is that we are so much more open as listeners. You can go back and forth quite seamlessly. You can have country origins, be a pop artist, and then go back like Miley has. And also, you don't have to give up being super, super country in order to sound pop. You can still have the traditional instruments on your music and still sound pop and marketable, which I guess is what Casey does. And then you have, Miley Cyrus, Kylie Minogue, bizarrely recently released Dancing, I think it's called, which is a super country sounding
song. Just call it Dolly on the Dance Floor.
Well, the whole the record, album is called Golden as well, and recorded in Nashville. And
there's obviously there's a real appetite for it. People are up for it in
clearly
a way that they didn't used to be.
And this isn't to say that I don't like the Kylie album for what it is. To be fair, I haven't heard the entire Kylie album. I heard that single and a few others, and I quite liked it. But when I heard this and I was thinking about kind of that album and some of the other artists that, you know, dip a toe into country, like Lady Gaga and you mentioned Ed Sheeran earlier, but it's almost like this is the album that Kylie...
That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah, it's a funny one, right? And do we have... Is there a sense of the authenticity of it? If you start off as a country star, you can kind of... You can put some pop instrumentation on, you can use less echo, you can do all these things that make your album more, in inverted commas, pop. But if you're a pop star, kind of you feel like you're jumping on a bandwagon just by suddenly making a country album. Do we have a problem with the authenticity reading of that?
I think if you're really good at it, people don't mind so much, but I do, you know, country people, country fans, I'm a country person, but, you know, I think they're a bit more, I don't know if protective is the right word or not, but what we don't want is people coming in and kind of making fun of it.
Balin, I know you wanted to flag up this wonderful woman.
You whined me and dined me when I was your girl. Promised if I'd be your wife, you'd show me the world. But all I've seen of this old world is a bed and a doctor bill. I'm tearing down your brooder house, 'cause now I've got the pill.
And that was, of course, Loretta Lynn with The Pill. Balin, you made the point that, you know, she seemed in your mind to be less Dolly and more Loretta Lynn.
Yeah.
Talk us through that one.
Pushing the boundaries and talking about things that maybe, you know, nice women in a certain type of genre aren't supposed to. And Loretta Lynn breaking down barriers there. We heard talking about The Pill when certainly nobody was allowed to talk about The Pill. That song banned from country radio for you know, its rudeness. And just the way Follow Your Arrow by Kacey Musgraves was banned because of weed and same-sex kissing.
Yeah.
And in the way that kind of Kacey Musgraves held up that mirror to the less romantic sides of country life on some of her previous albums, that's exactly what Loretta Lynn did as well, you know, kind of comparing and contrasting the life of, say, you know, Jackie Kennedy with her expensive haircuts and her nonstop dinner parties, with her back in Kentucky with a baby on her hip and one on the way and kids running around, and real life, but not romanticizing it. And
these
I think
great, that, those sort of little vignettes. She's such a good, I mean, obviously Loretta Lynn is, but Kacey Musgraves as well seems like such a great, great writer of those real small town vignettes.
Yeah, know? And really great plays on words as well, and really great kind of double meanings to things. And I think in that way, she's a lot like Loretta Lynn. You know, she's really kind of, and not challenging it for challenging's sake, just talking about what real life is like, talking about the issues that are important to her, and recognizing that there are people listening that, you know, it's important to them as well.
I definitely think that one of the things that has always made Kacey really special is the fact that she can write about those with a bit of cynicism, but she doesn't sneer. She doesn't sneer on the other people in her town. She doesn't sneer on her family. She doesn't sneer about her own origins and her own roots, but she manages to be a little bit sarky, clever, and subversive at the same time. And that's why she was so new and so fresh when she came about after, you know, years of great female country songwriters and singers, but no one was quite skewering it in the same subtle way that she was.
Yeah, the joke always ends up on her, kind of thing. She's very happy to wear the joke herself, kind of thing. Yeah. Right?
I think you can skewer something as long as you're on the inside. You know,
exactly.
It's like that saying, like, you know, I can talk about my mama, but you can't talk about my mama.
I'm not even
allowed
to talk about cornbread.
Well, yeah, exactly. But you know, like, you can make fun of your own family, but if somebody else makes fun of your family, them's fighting words.
Yeah.
So that's why Kacey Musgraves and Loretta Lynn had that freedom to be able to talk about all sides of those things and not just romanticize them in kind of a way that was, you know, what the mainstream wanted to think about country life.
Yeah, I actually think that that's probably one of the reasons why it would be very difficult to write a really good country song that was clever and that's sharp and speaks to the heartland country if you're not from it, because otherwise you don't have a right to say that, I guess.
The fans will...
As that.
The fans will sniff you out, won't they? And they'll
they
find
will.
The truth. It's true, though, right? Whatever genre it is, whatever genre it is, you've got to wear it, you've got to live it, I suppose. Not just rock up to Nashville and record it. Although we love Cully on this show, that's fine too. Just finally, Kacey Musgraves, we obviously love her on this show, and thank you both for being so wonderful at talking about her. Do you feel the kind of the be-all and end-all is that Loretta, is that dolliness of country, that one day she'll put on the sort of... the rhinestone ball gown and belt out these numbers while sort of playing to strum a guitar. Do you feel that that's where she might end up, that there is still something cherishable about that kind of dated idea of the country diva that's still kind of still very strong somehow? Baylor, maybe you're very well poised to answer this one.
Kacey's already done that.
I mean, she
did that with her last album. The whole look of
pageant material.
That album.
The tour was called the Rhinestone Review.
Yeah, Rhinestone Review. And you know, she wore kind of, you know, rhinestone cowgirl outfits. All of her backing musician wore kind of the nudie suits, the Manuel suits that you kind of rhinestone encrusted.
Yeah.
She added lights to them, by the way. They all lit up. So she's already played on that. As you know, she's already said, "Hey, yep, this is where I'm from. It's okay to embrace this. It's also okay to make fun of this. And I'm going to put on a good show for you." And, you know, I mean, have you ever been to a show with a light-up cowgirl? No, it was great. You know, it's
man,
exactly
I feel
what
like a woman.
Exactly.
Thank you both so much for joining us, Sarah Carson and Baylin Leonard. That brings us to the end of today's episode. Kacey Musgraves' new LP, Golden Hour, is out now on Mercury Records. And the Monocle Cult Show was produced, of course, by Holly Fisher, and I've been Robert Bound. Join us at the same time next week, but for the time being, let's play out with my favourite track from the album, at least. This is Kacey Musgraves with Space Cowboy.